You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Out at Wildcat Golf Club for the occasional Invitational Friday. We're going to be out at Apollo Men's Health. Join us on Friday, 12 to 3, the Pearland location of Apollo Men's Health. You can ask the team while we're there about the variety of services like hormone replacement therapy, body composition analysis. Stop by, see the Killer Bees broadcasting live Friday, 12 to 3 at the Pearland location. We'll be there, Joe Blank and I and the ESPN Street team. We'll be out at Apollo Men's Health Friday at the Pearland location.
Oh, that's going to be a lot of fun. Docco and his staff, he's terrified of being on the air because he's not good at it, but he's really good at what he does at Apollo Men's Health. So looking forward to having everybody stop by, say hi, and then, like we said, sign up at Apollo Men's Health and see what they can do for you.
He's going to swing by a little bit later.
He's going to be here
too.
A little later. He will be terrified to come anywhere near us because he won't want to be on the air because he's scared of those things, but he's really good at what he does. And that's why everybody needs to go to Apollo Men's Health on Friday.
You see Major League Baseball continuing its trend of corruption? Like, if you want to go back, I mean, how far back do you want to go? You want to go Black Sox back in the 1918 time?
Just,
no, let's go back to the steroid era.
Rob Manfred, for God's sake.
Well, Manfred wasn't the steroid era.
I know he wasn't. He's just a complete farce anyway.
This new story coming out that Major League Baseball this past year used not one, but two different baseballs. Remember they had the live ball and every ball was flying out of yards and they were setting the record for most home runs in a single season, and then Major League Baseball corrected the issue. They put in play a new ball, probably in the postseason of that very year, by the way. But last year, Major League Baseball has admitted to two balls being used, and you know what they're blaming? They're blaming the COVID pandemic and the supply chain for having two balls.
But the funny thing about that is the baseballs, are actually stamped as well. And so the theory doesn't hold water because a lot of the balls were stamped after the pandemic that they swear were balls that were old and used because they had to prior to the pandemic. So once again, baseball is trying to hold water with a strainer, for God's sake, and it's just it's leaking all over the place. It's a joke. The fact that no other sport, maybe golf, other than golf, maybe, can you control the ball in the sport as the governing body of the sport and control the effect on the outcome on a game. I mean, football, look, you can deflate. We saw the Patriots deflate the footballs, right? NBA just changed from Spalding to Wilson. People are complaining about the basketball itself. But it's still the same size. It still fits through the rim. And you're not dealing with the things you're dealing with baseball, with the core and the center and the way it's strung. And the fact that you can alter that. It's one thing to use a dehumidifier in Colorado. It's another thing to use two different baseballs, and you determine where it goes. And, oh, by the way, you own the company that's the official baseball provider for the sport. Corrupt as all get out.
I mean, they were corrupt the first time around when it was a couple of years ago. I had a buddy who was pitching in the bigs at that time, and he's like, yeah, we can tell that there's a change in the ball. And you had a guys like Sean Doolittle this year that he noticed, I think it was Joey Votto, was hitting like with the – I think it's the heavy ball that would travel
when all the no-hitters early in the season, because they had changed it to a softer core baseball, they were scared that people were going to be – turned off by baseball because pitching was dominating. So they went to that heavier, hardcore center. It sounds like we're talking about candy bars. But, yeah, they went to the hardcore center so that the ball would travel faster, so it'd be more runs scored, more home runs hit.
You had a physicist, Dr. Meredith Willis, who analyzed over 100 baseballs from 15 ballparks and found that Rawlings, who you mentioned, was owned by Major League Baseball since 2018. They went back and forth on making two different kinds of balls. And then you had Bradford Williams Davis, a Business Insider, that uncovered that unbeknownst to the players, coaches, scouts, and executive, Major League Baseball used two different balls in 2021. Each was designed to perform differently. I don't want to get too much in the weeds here, but the lighter ball deadened. The heavier ball was kind of juiced and went further. Which the problem here is you talk about how the other scandals in baseball.
I heard you have heavy balls when you juice.
Sure. Oh. Steroids were something that certainly affected the game, right? We saw record-breaking numbers. Barry Bonds breaking the single-season home run record and the career home run record. A lot of the 50 home run clubs. You have tons of dudes that don't belong. Luis Gonzalez, Steve Finley, Brady Anderson. We
Brady
can go
Anderson's
on and on.
Yeah.
That influenced the game. However you want to look at sign stealing, I mean, from an Astros perspective, you know how that point of view is. And outside of the Astros perspective, you know how that point of view is. That's something that influenced the game. Using two different baseballs in the same year at the same time, changing from ballpark to ballpark, influences the game just as
not
much
only
as that,
Jeremy,
influenced the
but
game.
Not having any documentation and reasoning behind it for stating in these games we use this baseball because of this factor, and we've documented everything and we have it on record so that we can justify everything we did and why we did it. Instead, we still don't know when they used this baseball versus that baseball, which teams benefited or which teams were involved in it. Was there a pattern where the Dodgers and the Yankees and some of the teams that Manfred has been over the top on protecting, were they the ones that were the beneficiary of getting some of the baseballs where more runs were scored or better games were pitched? It's not even a conspiracy theory anymore. It's a travesty that there's this big of a hypocrisy going on in one of the big three sports.
And it's a manipulation of the game.
Yep,
and Robert Manfred has tried to manipulate the game for quite some time now. And it's really with the baseballs. I mean, you go back to a few years ago when they had the live ball and home runs were hitting all over the place. Then you get to the playoffs and they deaden the ball. So you're not having as much home runs in the postseason. You have two baseballs last year in 2021. You have the sticky substance ban in the middle of the season. So you have manipulation coming from the top, trying to influence the product on the field in a way to try to increase dollars and try to increase the ratings. Like, this is something that
the
CBA needs to do. Like, they got to fix that problem. And, like, to me, this is a sign where Manfred's got to go.
Well, I agree with you that. But here's the other thing you haven't even touched on when we're talking about all these things with all these different versions of what baseball's been able to control. When we were talking about spin rate in this last regular season, suddenly the laces on the ball were not raised as much. Suddenly they were manipulating the baseball that way, too. It may have been wound the same way with the same core and the same center, but suddenly the pitchers were telling you it was like grabbing the smooth baseball. There was hardly any stitches at all where normally they would capitalize on the higher stitching to be able to have an effect on spin rate. So the hypocrisy involved in having your governing body own the company that makes the ball that you play with and manipulating it, that's something you hear about in European soccer sometimes, kind of those kind of things, the way they would manipulate things, FIBA or whatever, with basketball internationally. But you can't do that with something like Major League Baseball.
And look, I understand that there has to be an evolution over time where things have to change a little bit here, a little bit there. But to do it without the transparency of the players and without getting the input of people who actually know, as opposed to the office, the dudes in the office wearing the suits, like, you got to have some transparency there. And that's where I hope the Players Association gets something done with the new CBA, where that sort of stuff can't happen anymore.
It's FIBA and FIFA, by the way, because I got soccer and basketball mixed up for a second, but they both do it, and they get away with it. But here's the other thing to your point. The fact when you read the whole article, you realize that both people within the game and players themselves knew about it, know about it, but didn't want to talk about it because they know the adverse effect it would have in their pocketbook, on them personally, and all the different, the splash that it would make. They all wanted to be mum, and then this reporter was able to uncover what he was able to uncover. It's just, again, if the article doesn't come out, they feel like they got one over.
Yeah.
And they're like Geppetto pulling all the strings on all the puppets that are playing the game, and it's not fair, it's not right.
Uncover the letter. You ever notice that scandal in baseball, though, is more extreme than scandal in football? Like, we're talking about the baseballs here in Major League Baseball, and we're calling for Robert Manfred's head, where you had Tom Brady deflate the football. Like, no one really cares that Tom Brady did that. He was suspended four games. He sat his four games. And, like, no one else really, like, there's not a stain at all on Brady's career. Like, Brady's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer, whereas, like, Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds aren't in the Hall of Fame. Dudes using PEDs and steroids in Major League Baseball, they'll forever be, like, in the black, you know, kind of like a black cow of Major League Baseball. And then you have dudes like Julian Edelman that get PEDs, and they sit out their four games, they're right back on the field, no one even bats an eye. I feel like scandal in baseball, we have a way of sensationalizing it, whereas in football, yeah, you serve your time, you get back onto the field, who cares, and kind of laugh it off.
Well, just because they're better at covering it up, too. Because as I told you about when I was a fly on the wall that time with all those guys that knew the Patriots cheating and to the level of extremes that they would take it to cheating, and I finally had to ask, why didn't you turn them in? And they're like, because it would tarnish the shield, it would damage the image of the NFL, and that takes money out of our pockets as we're retired players now, so therefore we didn't want to do it. So they just did a hell of a lot better job covering it up and basically minding their P's and Q's in how they did what they did to put the message out there, so they don't have as much of what Manfred has to deal with on a daily basis because he doesn't know how to handle it.
There's truth to that, and there's a lot of validity to it. I also feel like baseball is a little more elitist, right? We're like, oh, you know, you're buttoned up, and don't break my home run record of the 1960s. How dare you if, you know, it changed the numbers and changed the way that home run leaderboards look like. Whereas in football, you don't really care about that stuff. Like, the numbers don't have the same impact of what Major League Baseball does. So, you know, you have Brady, who's the best player of all time, deflated footballs. He served a 4-game suspension right. for doing that. You know, Barry Bonds is probably a good comp as perhaps the best baseball player. He's not even in the Hall of Fame. You think Brady's going to have any issues being in the Hall
no,
of Fame?
It's a great
Absolutely
point.
But,
and here's the thing. We're looking at it right now with Tiger Woods on the screen from a golf perspective. Do you think that golf – look, they did what they could within the means, but do you think that golf was so upset that the records of 30, 40 years ago might possibly be broken by Tiger Woods? The only thing they did was at a certain point they tried to lengthen the course, but technology in every sport got better. Technology in baseball, technology in golf allowed you to believe that, you know what, that's how we progress in life. And things are going to get – it doesn't stain any of the records or damage the guys that set them from Babe Ruth all the way back in time to Cy Young and all the different people, Honus Wagner. But at the same time, we evolve. And when we evolve, records are made to be broken. It should be flattering. It not should be something where we're sitting there going, oh, God, we got to, you know, how do we deal with this one or how do we deal with that one so we protect our big teams and this and that and the other thing. It's crazy to me.
Our view in Houston might be different because we lived it, but universally, or at least across the country, what do you think has more of a negative stain in terms of perception? Astro sign stealing or the Patriots Spygate, where they had cameras in the locker room.
There's no doubt in my mind that it's all the Astros.
They make fun of the Patriots, but I don't think anybody feels like that's why the Patriots won.
See, and you're right, and that's the hypocrisy of that, in the fact that the Astros can be looked at as just, you know, they wouldn't have won if they didn't cheat, and so their team wasn't very good. The Patriots are a dynasty, and everybody refers to them as a dynasty. And regardless of whether they deflated footballs or videotaped walkthroughs and stole signals and did all the things that they did, they were still going to win it anyway because they were good, because they were the Patriots. You're right. It's absolutely a hypocrisy that the Astros, everything is tarnished, and the Patriots, everything is celebrated.
The 5874 on the text line, 713-780-3776, if you want to get in. He brings up a great point about the use of two different baseballs by Major League Baseball. So it could also lead to an FBI investigation. They can prove it affected the outcome of the game, which how did it not? Because you start looking at this, too. Like, look at Major League Baseball and who they're now in business with. Sports books are very prevalent now in professional sports. DraftKings, FanDuel, DFS, things like that. People have lost money betting on these games, whether it's over-unders, whether it's the totals, whenever you look at Major League Baseball games across the board, or then just the DFS. I mean, your fantasy player might have been had a pitcher's ball as opposed to a hitter's ball, and now you're affecting people's money pocketbooks. I bet you that a class action lawsuit gets filed against Major League Baseball because of this. I don't know if it's going to go anywhere, but I bet you see some action against MLB for doing that.
It'll be interesting to see how they try and manipulate the system, or if they think they have a chance to do it when it's out of their control like that. Because, you know what, we always get our hopes up when we get investigations and courts involved and FBIs and other things, but look at how well it got that letter unsealed. You know, it's amazing that baseball, after the ruling came down that said the letter should be unsealed, that somehow baseball got involved in the appeal process and wherever it is. We don't know where the letter is. We don't know where that stands, but we know it hasn't been opened.
You know, maybe that has something to do why scandal is worse in baseball than it is in football, too, is because baseball tries to cover it up. And they also know about it. Like, you're telling me they didn't know about the steroid scandal in the summer of 98 when Sosa and McGuire were trying to save baseball after the strike of 94? They absolutely knew about it. They knew about the sign stealing, and that's why they tried to cut down, and then the Astros continued to do it. They know about the baseballs, and it takes discovery to find that out.
And they also, from a wise perspective, they knew that they couldn't completely turn the other way and ignore the sign stealing. But they also knew if they just, in their minds, if they just came up with the one poster child or the one poster team that was going to be the victim in all of this, they could hopefully sweep the rest under the rug and keep everybody from thinking it was sport-wide.
Yeah, you save a couple of teams up in the Northeast when you
sure
do that. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Coming up next, first day of Texans Christmas. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
You're listening to a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Broadcasting live from Wildcat Golf Club for the occasional invitational. Granato made the turn a little bit earlier, so he was 7 under through 9.
So he's got he's got a ringer. He's got a kid.
Buying it?
Yeah, because he said he's honestly saying that he got it. It's his invitational. He can do whatever he wants. It's the John Granato invitational subliminally behind everything that we do on the occasional invitational.
I want to be Granato when I grow
up. But somehow he gets every year he gets the ringer. Now he says, yeah, some kid I don't know is playing with us, but he's playing out of his mind. Oh, I bet he is. But at the same time, I don't think you're supposed to win your own tournament. I know when I was with the Rockets, I won the Rockets tournament several times and wasn't allowed to collect because I was an employee.
Listen to this, Flex. Listen to this. I won back in my days. Back when I was younger.
Talk about Flex. Let's get you to get on that seated row machine again. That was the kind of Flex.
Yeah,
your back. You're doing a seated row and your back got jacked up.
That's still a little bit tight. That's the last time I might work out for the rest of my life, by the
way. Oh, no. January 1. You said
January 3rd. You got to go through the weekend.
Okay.
Yeah. The beautification of Jeremy Branham.
Yeah, the beautification of Jeremy Branham starts January 3rd. Todd might even want to bring back that whole weight loss challenge just for Branham beautification committee.
The rest of the body has to catch up to the lips, and I think we'll be good. We'll be good to go. 2022, the year of JB.
Chapstick can't cover it all up, Tyler.
2022, year of the JB. First day of the Texans Christmas. It's December. First day of December. Can you believe that? It's the first day of December. Going to have some fun with the 12 Days of Christmas lyrics. I've been advised not to sing, so I'm going to save you the JB sultry tunes of singing the song.
Thank you.
Management telling me no longer to sing on the Killer Bees. But you know the story. Song and a Christmas tree. You talk about the 12 days of Christmas. You give your wishes and your hopes.
12 swans of swimming.
Yeah, you know.
Five golden rings.
You know the gist. We're going to do that with the Houston Texans. We're going to build up to it, of course, with the 12 days of a Texans Christmas. We're going to take our turns with our hopes and wishes of what the Houston Texans will have Santa bring them for Christmas, which is coming up. And we might even get somebody to sing a song. It'll be a better voice than you or me that has to sing it. Maybe Tyler Scott can do it. He can belch out a tune.
Tyler, once he gets that vanilla pecan lip balm on, he can bark out a tune like nobody's business.
Yeah, so for the next 12 shows, we're going to give a wish for the 12 days of a Texans Christmas, and then whenever we're all wrapped up, we're going to produce a song over it. Tyler Scott, we're just going to put that on him, first time he heard about it. And we're just going to take turns with our hopes. So Brendan Riley, our esteemed producer of the Killer Bees, doing a great job, by the way, he's up first. First day of Texans Christmas. What is it bringing us, Brendan?
Guys, there's nothing more painful than going through a rebuild. Than going through a rebuild without a franchise quarterback. I don't care how they get it. It could be Davis Mills for all I care. I'm not saying it is. It could be the draft. It could be a trade. It could be Davis Mills. The number one thing I need for Christmas is a Texans franchise quarterback.
All right. First day of a Texans Christmas, hoping that they bring a franchise quarterback to the Houston Texans. What do you think about that, though, by the way, Joel? Do you think that the Texans need a franchise quarterback going into 2022 for Christmas?
No, not for 2022. I think that in their future and in their near future in the next couple years they do. But as we talked about, this roster is so bad and it needs so much work that the last thing you want to do is go through David Carr syndrome all over again. Yeah. And you get the franchise quarterback too early before you have a line to protect him and receivers to throw to and all the things that you need to do when you're a franchise quarterback, and you get damaged goods.
Because I have to push back on that.
You damage
him.
Please.
Because you shouldn't. Like, and I'm with you on the broad topic of you don't necessarily need a franchise quarterback right away. And you look around some of the teams that have built it and built it right. They don't always get that franchise quarterback at like the very first step of the rebuild. But this offensive line is in a much better spot than the expansion Houston Texans. Like, you still have a Laramie Tunsil on the roster.
If you don't play musical linemen with all the different positions
and
they play.
That's what I'm fascinated with, too. Like, Titus Howard playing left tackle this past week against the Jets. What's the plan there? Like, is the plan to keep him there for the rest of the season? Is it an audition for him to be the future left tackle for the next 5 to 7 years? And then the idea is to trade Laramie Tunsil in the offseason? Like, if that's not the plan, what exactly are they doing by playing Titus Howard at left tackle? Why not just move him back to right tackle?
I'm going to answer your question with a question, because it goes back to a discussion we had earlier in this show. Do you really think they have a plan? Because I don't. Because as I've told you in multiple discussions, when it gets to the offensive line of this football team, if they did have a plan, they wouldn't continually move all these pieces around so that they can't get chemistry and continuity across the line. They continually move Howard. They continually move Sharping. They continually do things that good football teams that have a plan don't do. And if you've taken this line, which forever and a day was god-awful, and you've gotten it to improve, and you've used high draft picks to get talent back on the offensive line to help bolster the guy you traded half the franchise for to get in Laremy Tunsil, you should keep these guys in one position, let them work on their craft at that position on a daily basis, and realize that with every practice, with every rep, with every game, they're going to get better to a point where they're going to become even better as a unit as time goes on. They haven't done any of that.
Yeah, I hope that they have a plan. Nothing has shown me that they do have a plan. But first day of Texans Christmas, a franchise quarterback for the Houston Texans. Now, is Jack Easterby the Grinch, though, for the Houston Texans?
Yeah.
Can what Santa brings you outweigh the negative influence of one Jack Easterby?
No, because I think I got to believe in one of those 12 days, at some point it's going to come up that one of the things that everybody's going to wish for is for that Grinch to go away. And if they don't, then they need to get their head examined, because that's one of those negative black clouds that's hanging over this franchise that, unlike a franchise quarterback where you can wait a year or two, you can't wait for the day that you get rid of that guy, that blemish, that big white-headed zit that won't go away on your Houston Texans.
Looking at the Battle Red blog that put together this kind of a list on the ways that Jack Easterby has influenced this organization and why you shouldn't trust Jack Easterby. Just looking at some of the players that have come and gone since the arrival of Jack Easterby. I mean, you could build a really good football team off of this list, like a playoff-worthy football team based on this list. DeAndre Hopkins, yep, who you traded for a second rounder and a bag of donuts, and perhaps the bag of donuts wouldn't have been nearly
as expensive
as what David Johnson cost you. Jadeveon Clowney. Look, Jadeveon was probably a little bit of a disappointment after being drafted number one overall, and maybe you didn't want to pay him off all the money. But just the way you went about that offseason and when you traded him and how you franchise tagged him, et cetera,
and what
you
circled
lost
around
the value
it was,
of what he
that
was.
Was the end of Brian Gain, because it was Bill O'Brien versus
a lot of people think that was
Brian
the
Gain.
Reason.
And I have sources that have told me it was one of the main, if not the only reason, why that Bill O'Brien got rid of his hand-picked GM in Brian Gain.
Tyrann Mathieu, another, you know, he's one of the best players defensively
and
for Kansas
well
City.
Yep.
Will Fuller, now Fuller's always hurt. Like, I don't know if I would have given the money to Will Fuller that, you know, he'd only get, what, $10 million for 1 year for Miami, and he's been banged up all season long. So that one I'm not really that sad about.
Well, that was a prove-it contract, and he's proved he can't stay healthy.
Exactly. Yeah. It's been proven in a negative way for Will Fuller's value going forward and earnings going forward. DJ Reader. Another one. Now, again, a free agent, good player. Perhaps, you know, DJ Raiders, to borrow a term from Daryl Morey, he's a guy that you draft in the middle rounds. He's not a guy that you spend, like, big-time defensive tackle money on, a la Chandler Parsons. To
I was
going to
say Chandler Parsons where I was
comparison.
Going with that, yep.
So DJ Reader, another one. Kareem Jackson, who, again, maybe a little bit older. Deshaun Watson, although he's technically still on the team, if Jack Easterby never comes around, Deshaun Watson, your quarterback for the Houston Texans? You could probably argue that he is.
It's a definite possibility. You're right. I just think that that's what I'm talking about. When we start talking about, from a national perspective, the image that this franchise, the stain that is the NFL's, like I said, acne, is the Houston Texans. And the major whitehead on the face of the Houston Texans is Jack Easterby. And no matter what you do and how you draft and what all the people in place do to try and make your franchise better, until that stain goes away, until that blemish is resolved, from a league perspective, from an agent perspective, from a player perspective, they are all leery of that guy at that team.
Yeah. I mean, he right now, he's the guy that oversees every, at least in terms of, like, the direction, maybe not the personnel, but very much involved in team decisions.
No, as far as I've heard, he still has a say in personnel.
That's terrifying, and I don't know why Nick Caserio would do that, although Nick Caserio is a Jack Easterby guy. Jack Easterby is a Nick Caserio guy.
You don't think that Jack Easterby holds over his head that I got you this gig?
I mean, that would be pretty messed up if he did that. Why would you do that?
Because it saves his job. It keeps him employed, and now because he's best buddies with the owner, he thinks he's even got more job security than he had before. But I'm sure in the early going, that was a constant reminder, and I'm sure in Casario's head it was too.
Yeah, Easterby's definitely the Grinch. How about people off the football field? Amy Pulisic, who's VP Communications. Andre Johnson, the advisor to the head coach. Jamie Roots, the team president. Brian Cushing, an assistant coach. And let's not forget about that Andre Johnson tweet, remember?
Yep.
He said, if I'm Deshaun, I stand my ground. The Texans organization is known for wasting players' careers. Since Easterby has walked into the building, nothing good has happened for the organization. And for some reason, someone can't seem to see what is going on. Pathetic. And I was a guy that was in the walls. And he told everybody. He told everybody. 713-780-3776.
He's the greatest player in franchise history along with J.J. Watt. When he speaks, and he doesn't speak often, that was the message that everybody should have taken to heart more so than they did.
Text coming in at 7771. They have a plan, but the plan sucks, and they're inept to be able to execute a good plan anyways. See, I agree with that. I firmly believe that they have a plan.
Do you?
They think that their plan is sound and is right. Yeah. Yeah, I think they've actually been consistent with their plan.
But no, because the inconsistencies come when you think that they're going a certain way with a certain plan, and then they go completely away from it. Like, they're going with cheap contracts and short terms and trying to get through this season, but then they overspend to bring in an Amendola, or they go in and they do something completely contrary to what the plan you think is supposed to do.
Whenever we come back, I'm going to be Nick Caserio and Jack Easterby and tell you what the Texans' plan is. Not that it's a good plan, but I'm going to tell you what the plan is, and I'm going to show you how they've been consistent with that plan. That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Cars for Kids. I love the people at Cars for Kids because it's a program that works in Houston, and it benefits the kids in Houston trying to get a second chance at their education and getting a degree, their high school diploma. And the fact is, it all stays in the Houston area at the Houston Can Academy. That makes it even more beneficial. And the fact is, it does you a big favor and a solid in the process. You guys may care and you may not, but the biggest thing is that you might have an eyesore that's around that. It's a vehicle. It's a boat. It's a trailer. It's an SUV. It's a car. It's a motorcycle. Whatever it is. It may not even be running, but you want it off your property. You want to get rid of it. You want to spend any more money, put any more money into it. You just want to get out of it, and that's where Cars for Kids can help. Go to carsforkids.org. They're going to come to you and tell you what they can do by towing away whatever you got at no charge to you. If you don't have the title, don't worry about it. They'll find it. They'll get it. If it's not running, it doesn't matter. What they do is they get it off your property. You mentioned ESPN 97.5, $50 gift card. Tax write-off by the fact that you've made a donation. The fact that you don't have to pay for towing, you benefit yet again. And then the process really begins, because they benefit by taking what you got and taking it into their possession and turning it into resources for kids that are trying to get their degree. By getting the fact that they don't have to worry about book money, bus fare, food in their bellies, so they can concentrate on the books, that's why the program works. Check them out today, carsforkids.org. I'm telling you, at the end of the day.
This is a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, live from Wildcat Golf Club. This is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
All right, here's the Texans' plan. And look, I don't necessarily agree with this plan at all, and I don't think they're executing the plan very well. But
you have
here
this
was
from
the
your
plan
sources?
Of Nick Caserio. No, to me it's obvious. To me it's very clear what they're doing. I think they tell it to you all the time, especially with their words and with their actions.
Okay.
Their plan was Nick Caserio is going to come in. He's going to clean house. He's going to push a hard reset on this organization. He's going to start rebuilding this organization. But it's going to take time. It's not something that's going to happen, you know, year one, year two. I don't really think you're going to start seeing a competitive team. Look, and I know the Texans have been competitive in games, and they're 2-9. I'm talking about, like, actually being a competitive football team where they're in every game, and, you know, maybe they're in the hunt for that seventh spot in the AFC. But their plan was they're going to come in, they're going to get rid of everybody that they feel isn't a good culture guy. They did that with Bradley Roby. They're also going to have the point of view, too, that they're going to change the culture, right? They're going to have a certain way of doing things. And David Culley talks about this all the time, where they have a standard in the organization, and it's a high standard, and that they're not going to settle for anybody that doesn't reach that standard. So they've had healthy inactives throughout the season. Justin Reed's just the latest. They've had a bunch of other healthy inactives that were starters. Lonnie Johnson has been benched this season. Zach Cunningham has been benched this season.
But didn't Cunningham only get it for a quarter? Was it just the first quarter of the game?
I think it was a half. It might have been a quarter, something like that. But they proved a point, right? That he didn't meet a standard. He broke a team rule or a standard that they had.
Okay.
And they suspended him for a length of
time.
But we don't know the degree of or severity of what they did to break the standard.
But what I'm saying is, and this goes back to Manfred or just this plan that you're talking about, part of the reasons why when you have a plan, you stay consistent, right?
Sure.
And past precedence matters. And the fact that if you did that with Cunningham, why didn't you do that with Justin Reed?
I mean, if you're asking me the question, and you are, is that because it would be a different degree of, you know, the, whatever it's the possible. Standard they broke, that the severity wasn't as bad, where maybe Cunningham was like a minute late to a meeting as opposed to Justin Reed yelling at the coach and then maybe skipping a practice. Something like, and I don't know that's what happened, but the severity of, you know, breaking a standard, where not every punishment is the same. Like, there's different punishment for different crimes, right?
Yep.
But you don't meet a standard, you're going to sit. Whether it's a quarter, whether it's a game, you don't meet the standard, you're going to sit. That's been the plan. Their plan hasn't been to, like, play their young players, which, I mean, you can argue is not the right plan for an organization to have that is rebuilding, right? Like, should Davis Mills be playing? Yeah, probably. Should some of the other younger players be playing? Yeah, probably. But they're not worried about that. Year one is all about culture. Year one's about fixing the culture in the locker room, trying to have a standard, much like the Patriots have their standard, much like the Patriots have their way, but they've been very clear about what they're doing. They've been, in my opinion, they've been very consistent with what they're doing. Now, I think it's flawed logic. I think the plan is flawed in a lot of different ways, but that's very clearly what they're doing in year one.
But so I don't want to be rude, so I don't want to interrupt. If you want to, do you want to get through all of it first?
Or no, do I think we that's go, it.
Okay, because to me, again, I'll go Brandon Cooks this time. Right? Okay, but if you believe in all the things that you said, you believe that's the plan, that's the program that's in place, that's the way you want to do business, that's the path you want to follow, but then you take a guy that's supposed to be one of your culture guys, supposed to be one of your locker room guys, supposed to be one of those fall-in-line type guys that just worry about football, and that's the kind of guy you want to build around, and then he goes out and goes AWOL. And sure, he tried to...
I mean, he didn't go AWOL. He sent one negative tweet about
it. He called
it
BS. He was like, you know, and then people started with the back and forth, and did he really want to be here, and all these different things. And then all of a sudden, a couple days later, they kind of catered to him instead of...
No, they didn't. They still traded Ingram.
No, the trade was already done with Ingram when he spouted off on social media, but yet they went back and said, we're not going to trade him because he's a culture guy, and they basically smoothed it all over and everything was fine. When, even if it was just a knee-jerk reaction at the moment, he wasn't a culture guy at that moment. He was pushing back on your plan with your guys, and he got treated differently. And I think that's where, I have the problem where the inconsistencies lie. Now, granted, your best player is not going to get the same treatment as your last guy on your roster. But at the same time, Zach Cunningham to a Justin Reed, or in this situation, a guy that's your culture guy, that is your locker room guy, that you want to build around, that you want to be here. But yet he's one of the guys, too, that's out there spraying bullets on social media. And you look at the fact that this is this culture you're talking about, but when you hear all the veteran guys that leave this program, whether they're traded or released or end up somewhere else, the minute they get out, the first thing they want to do is, thank goodness I'm not there anymore.
Yeah.
Thank goodness Randall Cobb and others, I got out of whatever I was that was a hellhole to get to where I got to where I need to be. That culture doesn't seem to be working.
No, see, that's fine, and like that's I don't disagree with that. But again, that's the consistency.
That program
of it.
Doesn't seem to be working either, is what I'm trying to say. That plan
sure.
Doesn't seem to be in place consistently.
See, I think it has been consistent because Randall Cobb is saying the same thing whenever he gets traded before the season ever starts. Whitney Mercilus is saying the same thing after he gets released in the middle part of the year. Players have broken the team standards and have had to sit. We don't know the severity of the standards that they broke.
I think if Bradley Roby spoke, you might hear a different story. He didn't. he tried. For some reason, he didn't say as much as I think he probably could have.
But to me, they're all unhappy about the same thing. They're all unhappy about, you know, how much they're involved, whether it's Caserio or Easterby. They think that the standards are probably a little bit silly. If you want to put truth serum into them as well, I think that they would all tell you that they realize that they're not an organization that is built to win or is ready to win. Like, that's why they signed all of these high-priced free – or
no,
not
look,
high-priced free agents,
look,
these older
of,
free agents.
Of all the things that we can be critical of Caserio for, the one thing that I will be complimentary of him for is he walked into a very, very difficult situation with the cap, and he did his very best to clear as much of the space and do as much as he could going forward to keep that from being a major hindrance, and he did a pretty damn good job. But there's still a ton of overpriced players that are still on the books for a lot of money. There's still a lot of things to be done there. But at least from that perspective, I can give him a passing grade from the standpoint of trying to make it better and doing the best he could immediately.
See, I don't even think the cap situation is that big a deal whenever you're a rebuilding team. Like, you're not going to go spend that money on free agents anyways. Like, you don't want it to be a long-term effect. Like, you don't want it to be something that's going to influence moves that you might make, like, in 2024 and going forward. But you can have cap hell in 2022 because who cares? You're not going to win very many games. You can have cap hell this year because who cares? You're not going to win very many games. But, like, if you go to
But you're also forgetting, Jeremy, at the start of the season, though. I'm sorry, but at the start of the season, they made press conferences and announcements to believe they were still trying to be a competitive team, yeah. And they still had guys on the roster where you could say, I could see that to a degree.
But is that coach talk, though? Like, I mean, you also had Nick Caserio at the start of the season said, look, this isn't always going to be about the results. It's going to be about the process, basically, and how you get there. I mean, we even talked about how Nick Caserio himself is embracing the suck. And the free agents that they signed in the offseason weren't free agents that were going to help you win. Signing Mark Ingram was not a move that was going to help you really win games. Signing Tyrod Taylor is not something that's going to put you over the top. Those guys were Danny Amendola is not a guy that you sign that's going to be a great slot receiver in the NFL. The reason that they signed those guys, which again, why the plan has been consistent, is because they're good locker room dudes. They're going to be good in the locker room, and they're going to change the culture, and they're going to do what's right.
They were face savers. They were saving face
because the standard shows. You. They're going to live by the standard. They're going to show the rest of the guys that's what they do. You're not signing those guys with the thought that we're going to win a bunch of games.
No, they're saving face. They also had to at least put a product out there and stay competitive.
For what?
To at least stay competitive.
What, they're not
though. But I told you that the ideal situation for them would be to do what the Rockets did a year ago. For 3.5 quarters, at least. Look, football is God in this state and in this city. So they want you. They don't want to get your doors blown off every single week.
I don't think the city
so
buys
some of the guys
though.
That they didn't at the time they did, early in the season they did.
The city?
The city believed that they were still trying to do things to stay competitive this year.
I
they won the game in week one, and everybody said, hey, you're jumping to conclusions too soon. This team could still get in as a wild card. There's still a chance for them to get in. So I think that week one even
there
did,
was a
more,
small
did more damage than it did help them.
There was a small pocket of people. I don't think that the city at large thought that week one victories was a sign that the Texans were going to be more competitive than they are. I mean, also the opponent that they beat. They beat Jacksonville at home. I don't think that was like a salvo on the season, being like, yeah, the Texans are for real. The Texans can compete. Tyrod Taylor's going to lead them to the postseason. They're going to contend in a bad
AFC
South.
Well, we heard a ton of that. And they thought that they were fooling everybody by doing it, but they didn't realize it was going to do them more harm than good, because then they didn't expect to see the level of the beatdowns that they took from the teams that they took it from when they got beat by not just double digits but big double digit margins.
The Texans, in my opinion, had the plan. They've lived their plan exactly how they've wanted. Didn't really care a whole lot about winning. They're going to bring in some veterans. They're going to be culture guys. If you don't meet a standard, they're going to suspend you. They don't care a whole lot about wins. They're going to have a positive attitude.
But that plan worked out in the draft.
I mean, it hasn't been a good plan. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, I don't necessarily agree with the plan, and I think in a lot of ways Nick Caserio has failed at this rebuild, and a lot of the moves that he has made haven't been the best decision for what is best for this organization going forward, but it's also the plan that they didn't even care about that in year one.
But didn't you also say that part of the plan or a good plan for any organization is when you have as many holes to fill and you have no first or second round pick, you take the best player available? They couldn't even stick to their own plan in terms of the draft.
See, I don't know if that was ever their plan.
Which but they took
which
a quarterback.
Is bad, which is like I don't think the quarterback.
They moved up. They gave
they
up more
up
assets.
Davis Mills.
They did all the things that
not for Mills. They
no,
moved
but,
up for Nico Collins.
I get it, but that's
Jordan.
What I'm saying. But they were giving up more assets instead of trying to get as many assets as they could, so that they could try and at least start the process going in the
which
right
was
direction.
Stupid. I mean, I agree with you that was stupid. But I'm not sure that the plan at that point was let's try to acquire as many draft picks as we can. And in fact, it's the opposite. If you want to look at every move that Nick Caserio has made from the start of the job to where he is currently, he doesn't care about draft picks. He's traded them willy-nilly. He's traded them for Ryan Finley. He's traded them for Anthony Miller.
Look, the one
he's been consistent in trading late-round draft picks for absolutely nothing. So he's been consistent in the terms of where he's been consistently bad for a rebuild.
Well, I will say this. The one thing that he was consistent with is the fact that he set the tone early on with his press conferences that wins and losses are not how this team should be judged. And that was the one thing that I can say, that he had a plan, he stuck to it, and he set the tone early on for the entire city to buy into that.
Right.
I think that in a lot of ways, they set the absolute opposite tone of what they were trying to achieve with some of the things that they did and some of the ways they went about it, and even winning the first game. Because then people got that false hope and that false sense of, hey, what they told us in camp about this team still is going to be a contending winning team, and Cal and all the BS he fed you about still a world championship caliber franchise. And then everything that they did was the complete opposite.
Maybe I'm naive, but I didn't feel like after week one people felt like this team was,
there was a
ready
lot,
to win.
Look,
I remember, the suck got a lot of backlash because they won in week one. I just don't know if it was like a majority of the city. I feel like you and I were the only two
that said they were going to win week one.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like they were going to win week one and then rattle off a bunch of losses.
Same here.
Maybe win a game here or there. That's exactly what's been happening. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Let's make a mess of this college coaching carousel. We do it next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, before we go to the break, I want to tell you about MyBookie yet again. I've been telling you about them. Look, it's a great place to put your money down, and now you can get your friends involved as well. If you're betting on sports anyway, and you're betting at MyBookie because we always tell you that's the place to go, now you can capitalize by getting your friends involved too. MyBookie is got a deal going on right now. You invite your friends, you can get them to play. You get up to 250% referral bonus, up to $250. All you do, log into MyBookie on your account, click on Refer Your Friends. You'll get a referral link to share with them. You can send it via text, email, social media, and it's unlimited. Invite as many friends as you want, and you'll get a referral bonus on each of their first deposits with MyBookie. That means more friends involved, more time to have discussions on what to bet on, who to bet on, and what's going on, and where you're winning, and how that they can get involved too. MyBookie, the best place to do all of that and so much more. They got the lines on the games, props on most games, live in-game betting to keep things interesting. Even in the most uninteresting blowout games, you can still put money down and make a difference in your pocketbook. Remember, refer your friends, get a 250% referral bonus up to $250 on their first deposit. Bet on anything, anytime, anywhere with MyBookie.
Live from Wildcat Golf Club for a Veritex Community Bank Roadshow, this is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get to the craziness of the college coaching carousel in a couple of minutes, but first let's go out to the HRMP listener line. Gary, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
Hey, Jeremy. Sorry, man. Couldn't agree with you more, disagree with you more, for giving the Texans credit for having any type of plan. I mean, number one, the word culture in sports is so severely overused. They don't have any culture. And then when you start mixing culture and religion, which you have Easter, then you start hopping up to mamas. They don't have a culture simply because maybe 10 people on this team will be here from 3 years and for now, you can't instill culture into the walls. There's no players. The head coach probably won't be here in 3 years. That's just something that they're selling the fan base, I guess, to give them cover. But they're just a bad team that's flailing. They don't really have a plan besides be bad and get draft picks. The culture thing is just a cover, and it's complete foolishness just because the team has a really poor culture, which is why players are getting traded and cut in the middle of the season. Supposed culture leaders are getting this one. Just a
comparison,
wouldn't that
create
the plan?
Yeah, Gary.
Joel. I love you.
I think what I wasn't necessarily clear with in that point is that I don't think that the Texans' plan is a good one. I just feel like they've been consistent in what their plan is. Like, their plan was they were going to clean up the locker room. They were going to be a culture team. They were going to sign free agents with the mindset of they're going to be good culture guys as opposed to being guys that are going to help you win football games. I believe that they didn't care about late-round draft picks. I'm not saying it is a shrewd plan, that it's not a good plan. And I've actually made that point that Gary made before, that, like, establishing culture is great. But who are you establishing the culture for in that locker room? Who is currently in that locker room right now that you expect to be on a playoff team in 3 seasons that would still have the residual culture that you're setting in year one? Like Lopez, Davis Mills, are those dudes going to be leaders on your team in 3 years? So I don't disagree with Gary. I don't disagree with Joel. I've just said that the Texans think that they have a plan. They think it's a good plan. We disagree with that. But the Texans have been consistent with what we agree is not a very good plan.
Yeah, look, and I think that, again, this is a discussion. This isn't anything more than that. As we continue to analyze this team, you and I have both said, look, from the standpoint of who's in that locker room this year and how many of them will actually translate to next year, let alone the actual rebuild and the long-term process, there's not many, if any. And now that you've burned a bridge with Justin Reed, you know, Tunsil's the guy that's going to sit out there glaring at you next to and Cooks probably having some value next to Deshaun Watson as guys that, as good as they are and probably the three most talented players on the roster, they're smart if they actually look for homes for all three. Because we also talked about the fact by the time they're good again, will those players be at their peak and doing the things that they're doing that they could be doing for a team that's competitive now and you could benefit for later by getting resources? I think one of the geniuses of all sports in terms of player personnel moves and having a plan and sticking to it and realizing you're going to get killed for it, but at the end of the day, you are going to make your situation the best for either you or whoever's in the job, is Sam Presti at Oklahoma City the Oklahoma City Thunder, who the Rockets play tonight, because of the fact that, unlike the trust the process, and then people like this with Sam Hinkie in Philly, like Jack Easterby and Casario and the people with the Texans, you could poke holes in it on a daily basis. And you could say, how long is this process supposed to take? And the things that they were doing weren't necessarily showing you that they were progressing down the right road. From Oklahoma City's perspective, they have made no bones about it. We'll take on your garbage contract of your overpaid, under return on investment veteran player, but you have to throw in assets. And at the end of the day, we talk about the Thunder in the next 3 to 5 years controlling almost a quarter to a third of the entire draft, which means they're going to get all the benefits of where they are, where they were currently when they were rock bottom. Texans don't show the same kind of signs, and they show too many inconsistencies, and they show too many moves.
Well,
in
terms of building the roster, like in the 53s,
but not just the roster
inconsistencies.
Like, you know what? And I'll even give them Cully, because right now, like the same thing we're talking about with the players. You don't need a coach right now to coach up guys and show
culture.
That he's capable when you don't, when basically you don't have a roster that's capable of winning, right?
They're valuing culture over winning. Absolutely.
But,
everything
but from the general manager's standpoint, I also believe that that is a problem. And I believe Nick Caserio was not the right guy. He might be the right guy for a different franchise that were maybe progressed farther along the line in terms of being a competitive team. But in terms of a guy from a complete rebuild to get his first opportunity and to do the things he's already done, as opposed to a guy that you could have brought in that's been there. The guy that I was harping on all along, and I aside from the committee people that had their choices, right, with none of them was Nick Caserio. Mine was John Dorsey. And John Dorsey, because in two different places, he had completely rebuilt a roster with quality NFL football players. And I get it, there's more to it than that, and the off the field and all the other things that go with it, especially from a Texas perspective. But at least from a guy that's been there, done that, and could do it again, that's kind of the direction I was leaning.
I'm not ready to go there yet with Caserio because I think he is a smart guy. I don't like the moves that he's made so far. Nothing that he's done has made you excited, and he's lost every trade that he's been in. The biggest problem with hiring Nick Caserio is that Jack Easterby's still here. And like we talk about how the Texans are trying to push, you know, make a hard reset with this organization, that's difficult for the fans to buy into a hard reset when they feel that the guy that's responsible for sinking them to rock bottom is still heavily involved. Like, that is the black cloud on the Houston Texans. And I feel like it's going to be very, very difficult for Texans fans to get excited about this team again until Jack Easterby's gone. Like, can you imagine, like, how much winning do you have to do where you're willing to stomach Jack Easterby still being on the sideline, clapping, doing the red fish, blue fish, high-fiving dudes in the stretching line before practice? Like, you're going to have to be a consistent winner before you can actually stomach that as a Texans
fan. Sure, as a fan. But it goes so much deeper and further when you talk about free agency and players, and they talk amongst themselves, and agents, and how easy or difficult it is to deal with the franchise because of Jack Easterby. That's what I'm saying. That's the white-headed zit that won't go away. That's the blemish that no matter what you do otherwise could tarnish this franchise and everything they're trying to do, because even if they do have said plan and they're trying to follow it, there are going to be guys that it might be the ideal fit, might be the perfect scenario, except for they are leery of Jack Easterby and for other reasons than how the Texans may treat them and say, okay, but you know what? I think I'm going to pass. I think there's another opportunity for me nearly as good that I'm going to go for instead. And I think that's where that's a whole different ballgame with just one guy. Regardless of what plan and who's pushing the buttons, that one guy is going to be the stumbling block to any of that plan taking shape.
No, I mean, I agree with that. And again, I wasn't saying that the Texans' plan was sound. I just feel like the Texans have been consistent in what their plan is. But it's just a situation where the fans just have difficulty really trusting who Easterby is. We'll talk about college football here in a little bit. I want to get out to the HRMP listener line again, 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Sloppy, you're in the Hive with the Killer Bees.
What's up, man? Man, I'm so sick and tired of this culture. What makes you think that the city of Houston cares about culture? Whenever we were the Oilers, Love You Blue, and we're actually the House of Pain, we were kicking each other's ass. We hated each other as a team. I mean, I'm tired of this freaking culture crap, man. We're not in the Bible Belt. This is not freaking Arkansas. I mean, come on, dude. I don't know where it stems from, but for some reason, I think we got the wrong owner. We need somebody with attitude. We need a team with attitude. We need somebody that got suspended for beating his neighbor's ass. You know that? I'm sick and tired of this culture.
No, I think that there's a lot of great points there, Sloppy. You're right. I mean, back whenever Kevin Gilbride and Jerry Glanville were getting on a fight in the sideline, right. Like those are the Love You Blue Oilers where the team absolutely hated each other, yet they were winning double-digit games every year, winning the division and making rides into the postseason. Never won a Super Bowl, but it was a lovable team that the city really rallied behind. The Texans, like, that's where they're at with the organization, is because if it does stem with the owner, and look, I think you can win with Kyle McNair as the owner, but he has to get out of the way. He can't have his buddies being, you know, decision makers in this organization. You also can't escape bad ownership. So the way you can get, you know, kind of get away with having a bad owner is if the owner stays out of the way. Okay, here's your money. You go run my organization. I'm going to sit up in my luxury box and in my suite and just count the money that I have. You go make all the decisions. I'm just going to get out of your way.
Bill O'Brien? He tried that with Bill O'Brien.
He's got to hire the right guy.
Because I don't think that he signed off on the D-Hop trade. I don't think he even had any clue the impact that would have, or the fact that that was the trade.
You don't think they told him?
I think they told him. I don't know that he paid attention to it, but I don't think that there was the – I think Bill O'Brien firmly believed that he could do whatever he wanted, whenever he wanted, and he would have the okay of the ownership. And I think that's the only situation in professional sports maybe where you could get away with that much no matter how incompetent the ownership is.
Yeah, that's the scary thing too. Like, that's going to be what's going to be hard to rally the fan base back. Like, if you lose trust in the ownership, like, you can escape a bad head coach. When you fire a head coach, it kind of rallies the troops, right? Like, look at all the other NFL teams that actually like their team, that trust their owner. You fire a bad head coach, it's almost like a renewed excitement, right? Okay, let's go get the next guy. He's going to be our hope. He's going to be the salvation for our organization and for our franchise, getting us back to where we want to be. But when you have the owner you can't trust, and when he has the Jack Easterby factor that is still very much an influence, and then when you have... Like, I don't feel like everybody's quit on Nick Caserio. I feel like Houston's willing to give Nick Caserio a chance. What bothers them about Nick Caserio is that he's an Easterby guy.
There's a fear factor,
and he's
part of
the triad.
Because of, like you said, you have been critical. You know, we've both been critical, but you've been really critical of Caserio and the move of the franchise. But you said you still, you know, have hope for him. And the thing is, though, that the fan base would like to have the same kind of hope, but there's a fear factor involved that thank God he didn't have a first or a second round pick. Thank God he didn't have.
See, I can't go that far because he hit on Lopez. Like the fact that he hit on Lopez ticks me off that he traded late picks for dudes that aren't even here.
But that's the thing. It's inconsistencies, too. Like if you're going to sit there and be a guy that's going to be being able to analyze talent. Right, you're not going to hit on every single one. I get that,
sure.
Right? But at the same time, you look at the moves he's made so far, and you go, there's a lot that makes me scared that when he does have a first-round pick and a second-round pick, and he does get this organization, hopefully, on the right path to where a decision here or there could make a difference in a couple of wins. But you don't have that. You have that fear in your heart that you're going to get the guy that made some of those bad moves instead of the guy that, you know, that was savvy enough to get some of the players that made a difference. And I think that's the other X factor that we haven't talked about enough is the off the field, right? Part of when you're doing this and doing all the things that you're doing is you can control your communications department. You can control what comes out of your coach's mouth at press conferences. You can have the meetings that we've talked about so that we're all on the same page, whether we agree with it privately or not. When we go out publicly, we have a unified front, and we set everybody up to believe, look, we're not good now, but we're doing everything to be good in the community, on the field, and everywhere else. They've been running amok all over the place and having to put Band-Aids on their own self-inflicted wounds all the time with all the different things that we've talked about throughout the season.
Look, and I like culture. But per se, I like the theory of culture. I think culture is good, but it has to have a lasting impact. Like, if you're going to set it in stone in year one, it needs to have the impact in years two through four. You got to have the pieces in place in year one that culture is going to influence. The Texans don't have the pieces in place where that culture is going to influence in years two through four under Nick Caserio. 713-780-ESPN if you want to get in. 713-780-3776, number to call, number to text. Also, Ken Rosenthal, he thinks the Astros are still communicating with Carlos Correa. Do you believe him? That's next. Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.